Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
Alan Ducasse. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. Alan Ducasse. So I am a fan more of documentaries, informational shows when I sit down to watch something than I am of entertainment. That is something I have learned about myself as I've gotten older. I don't know if I have the time to invest in a storyline that takes weeks.
You
can binge anything, I can't tell you the last show I've ever gotten into. I mean, I love The Office, but I mean, that's just to put my brain to sleep at the end of a long day. So Alan Ducasse is a French chef. And so last night, here's how this progression works, Daniel. The Remster, Remy, wants to watch what he calls Eek Eek when he eats dinner. So Eek Eek is Curious George. Okay. All of the Curious George episodes live on Hulu. We have Hulu. And so then Reagan likes to watch some other shows on the Hulu, but she's watching David Attenborough after the Remster. Like, Remster goes to bed, Reagan wants to watch a little bit of television, and so we're watching some David Attenborough, and then Reagan goes to bed, and now it's just me and Tanya, you know, and we're just like dead tired, you know. And so I put on, while she was doing something, I put on this, I didn't even know what it was about. I played the trailer, and it's Alan Ducasse. And what I really liked about watching this chef was how obsessive he was to quality control. And I think that speaks to what I really enjoy doing, is watching people who are great at what they do obsess over the details of what they do and how they bring some of the greatest things to life. And there are some fantastic documentaries on Hulu. Has nothing to do with money. But, well, unless you're spending it on Hulu. But stock nerds and market lovers, I always appreciate that you indulge me, because, you know, the life that you want isn't just revolving around trading and investing. If it is, that narrow focus tends to be tough. You can be obsessive about what you're doing, meaning the quality control, how much you study, the rigor to which you put into your chosen profession, if it so is investing and trading. But to have nothing else in your life is to live a vapid life, in my opinion. So I appreciate it when you indulge me, and I even more appreciate it when you write to me and write to us and share the things that you're doing outside of trading, and you share your lives with us. And so with that, we kick off another edition of Your Money Radio. It is Danny Stewart and Tim Razor. I'm live. We are live with you here in studio. No matter when you're listening, we are live with you. We are like
the moment.
Yeah, we're like the good, you know, like when Fred Flintstone would have a dilemma. Right. And like the angel Fred would appear on one shoulder and the devil Fred would appear on another shoulder. Yeah, we're like that, except we're not angels or devils. We're just on your shoulders all the time, no matter when you're listening to us, seeking our guidance, praying to the market gods. It is us who answers. And then Don Vandenborg, the portfolio extraordinaire from St. Augustine, Florida, he is also live with you, too. I'm not sure where Don lives on your shoulders. I might need to grow a third shoulder. How you doing, Don?
Doing great. How's it going, guys?
Well. So we'll get in some things here as we talk about. I don't think you come to us for Job Friday analysis, but I do want to touch on two things. And the reason why I don't think you come to us for news analysis is because there's so many other outlets. What we do here is talk about what potentially could happen on the right side of a chart. And we alert you to all the scams in the industry so you don't get hurt by them or your family doesn't get hurt by them. But to talk about the news, it's first price, then news. It goes against everything that we stand for. And if you don't understand first price, then news, that means the stock market does something, then typically the news event happens, and then it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. Like the market's been pulling back a little bit, and then the headline jobs number was pretty low, right? 20,000. And so it doesn't matter where you stand on it. It's not a political statement we're about to make when we talk about the jobs number, but it is extremely interesting to look under the hood of the jobs report and see two key metrics. Okay. Two key metrics. One, the 3.4% wage growth is amazing. It is a big deal. And why is that a big deal, stock owners and market lovers? Because we are, 70-80% a consumer driven economy. You have to understand that if people have more money in their pockets, they're going to spend it. That's who we are as Americans. We are consumer driven. China, as some people call it, it wants to become a consumer-driven economy. Why do you think they're having such horrible export numbers, such horrible trade data in China? Why? Because they're not service-driven, they're not consumer-driven, they're manufacturing-driven. And when the manufacturing shifts to countries like Thailand or Vietnam, which it has for a number of U.S.-based companies, providing all that consumer to consumers, mm-hmm. consumerism to consumers,
right?
China gets hurt. They're desperately trying to, China is desperately trying to become the economy that we are. And that's the battle of wills. So when you see in our stock, in our markets, at our news cycle, that it was only a 20,000 jobs created. One, Ryan Dietrich, I hope I got that name right. He's the one who tweeted out what I'm about to say. Just 10 years ago, 2009, the February jobs report for 2009, so 10 years ago for the February jobs report, 615,000 jobs lost. So think about that, stock nerds, as you're sipping your coffee or whatever your beverage du jour is when you listen to the sound of my voice. I always imagine someone's out there, got a little Cavassier, maybe has their loved one next to them, the soothing sounds of my voice.
Okay.
Arousing. But as you think about it, 10 years ago, 615,000 jobs lost. I can't tell when you're looking at me, Danny, if you just are amazed that I know all this stuff off the top of my head, because I'm not even looking. I'm looking directly at you.
I'm just amazed at your streaming consciousness thought.
Oh, I can do anything. That's the power of me. Okay. And so... Not all superheroes wear capes, Danny.
Yeah.
So
you amaze yourself, don't you?
Oh my gosh! Every day I stare in the mirror. Still here. So 615,000 jobs lost with this equivalent job report 10 years ago, and now you stand at an amazing rolling average, which I believe is like 180,000, like over 6 months, 185,000 jobs created, but just 20,000 for the February month. Whether they get revised up or not is not my contention here. The two factors that you want to pay attention to, in my opinion, are the U6, which had its biggest drop, and the U6 is what they call the Danny. Can you simply explain the U6? It's the real unemployment rate.
Yeah, it's a broader measure. It takes in consideration all the different levels of what they do is they quote the U4 now.
Right.
I mean the U3, but the U3 is very narrow and it doesn't count a lot of different metrics that the U6 is. So the U6 is really
has more data in it.
Has more data in it, and it was really kind of how they reported unemployment. 20 years ago.
Sure.
So if you really want to compare apples to apples, you gotta.
That's fine. So the U3 number that Danny's talking about is 3.4%.
Right.
But the U6, which is the real, they'll say the real unemployment rate, and at the height of the financial crisis, the U6 was 10-12%.
Oh.
It was
17-18. Okay, there you go.
And so the U6, with its drop this past month, had its biggest drop ever, which is a good thing. So,
meaning unemployment went down
for the U6, yes, for that number. And it's a really big deal. There are so many people that have decided, and it's a big decision. This is a tremendously huge decision, stock nerds and market lovers, that the decision to come off the sidelines and work
Well, yeah, not only that, but believe that, in other words, they weren't even being counted before the U3 number. They were kind of on the couch for too long. Now they're saying, things are good enough. I can find a job. So
they're not disillusioned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so they're coming and they're working and they're staying in the workforce. And it is an amazing thing. And I think it's an amazing thing because it's this long into the cycle. Mm-hmm. Like you keep, and I'm tying some things together here that people are hearing, I believe, in the news. And I want to just point out what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. And so when, well, it's late cycle, market's got to pull back, late cycle. And then if you think you translate that to the economy, the market and the economy don't always work in sync. You know that stock nerds and market lovers, maybe your loved ones don't. That if the economy is still generating enough jobs that the U6 number is declining so much, that is very indicative of a strong economy. If we had a divergence where the U3 number would, Jesus, Danny, I didn't think I was going to do this today. I find all this drivel so boring, and I can't, and I didn't realize I was going to go into this. I have a run sheet in front of me, stock nerds and market lovers. Here's how this works. I have a run sheet in front of me, some things I want to cover with you. I don't tell Danny or Don what I'm going to talk about, so I get a genuine, honest conversation out of them, not some contrived, horrible podcast like you'll get from upstarts in this industry like Investors Business Daily, which is about to launch one, and a whole bunch of other people. But anyway, you get real analysis here, and I didn't think I was going to go down this road, but I am, and here
we
are.
Okay.
So it would be a bearish divergence in my mind if you had the U3 number go down somehow, but the U6 number ticked up. Think about it, and then go, yeah. And so if it were to diverge like that, that would not, or if the U6 number was ticking higher and the U3 number just stayed the same. The U3 number, once again, is just the number you hear reported on the news.
Right. If the U6 number is ticking up, it means things are getting
worse
no matter what they're saying, good or bad.
Right. Under the surface, things are not getting that great. And so you would be very concerned about that. It can stay the same, but the fact that it just had this huge drop and there's this really nice wage gain, and oh, by the way, the Fed's on the sidelines. This is really good news. And now that might not translate to a good market day on a Friday for the stock market, but it's really good news for the consumer. So if you can keep the dollar low a little bit, if you can keep just a little bit, if you can keep inflation also low, and you can keep the Fed on the sideline. And Tim, what does the Fed on the sideline have to do? Well, everything. It keeps car payments lower, meaning when you go to finance a vehicle.
When you say on the sidelines, meaning not getting in there, jumping in there and raising rates.
Yes. And it keeps credit card payments from ballooning. And houses. Oh, by the way, houses, 18-month high. No, 18% higher. Excuse me. 18% higher. Housing starts for February. Oh, interesting. So people feel confident enough to do... Interesting that how on a bad day on Thursday in the markets, housing stocks were the ones that were up. Mm-hmm. I always say somebody knows. So I don't know what you make of a 20,000 person job, jobs created report. I do know that the U6 going down, the biggest percentage drop ever for that number, is a big deal. And I do know that 3.4 wage percent growth is a big deal. And I think you take those things into consideration. Again, that doesn't translate into higher stock prices. But if you said, well, Tim, what stocks would you look at with that information in tow? I would look at things in like Alta. I would look at things like Chipotle. I would say, where is the consumer spending? And then from there, you want to figure out what your screen is of those types of stocks. You know, like maybe you don't look at Elf makeup. ELF is the ticker symbol. Maybe you do look at like Alta, ULTA. And so you have to have some kind of fundamental screen that's matched with a technical screen, in my humble opinion, Danny's and Don's as well, that actually gets you to find the best merchandise in the market. Hopefully that all makes sense. Which then translates me into,
Translates.
No, really? You're gonna now? After all that, now you're gonna criticize my language?
Sorry, I drifted off asleep. But I just want.
Oh my God!
You're talking about economics.
Unemployment talk is so boring. Anyway, stock into market lovers. Where are my manners? 855 Real Wealth is how you get a hold of us. Dan at revereasset.com. Don at revereasset.com. Tim at revereasset.com and listen. All the information provided here is for what? Your edification purposes only, never, ever, 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 ever to be misconstrued as advice. If you want advice, you just have to give us a call. Now, here's the thing. If you give us a call, you can't be afraid. So if you're sitting on the sidelines, you're like, man, my portfolio is getting shellacked because I am in a pie chart, which is 90% of you. Well, then call us.
Or conversely, I'm not making any money because I'm scared and I'm all in
cash. Oh, there's the other side too. And so, look, we don't have a sales staff that's going to hound you. If you call us, we're going to answer your questions, and then we're going to cease and desist, meaning we're not going to bother you. And the reason why is because we are too busy with the things that we do every day here in the shop at Revere. So if you want to ask your questions or you're curious about the five portfolios that we manage in-house that you'll find at revereasset.com, bottom third of the page, you click on the buttons, you find the portfolios, the strategies, like Blue Chip Income is one of my favorite portfolios that we manage. All you have to do is don't be afraid. Reach out to us. And look, we answer the phones when you're available, which is the weekend. So if you want to call us, please, please, please do so. So now, I didn't want to say translate. I wanted to say kind of transfer.
Transfer.
Okay. Man, like,
different word, yeah.
Yeah, well, starts with a T. Yeah. Same word, Danny, starts with a T.
T-R-A-N, you got the first part right.
Yeah. So the perils. Okay, so if you want to learn, I just have this bullet point down here that I can pontificate on because it's interesting to me. So the perils of talking about trading with people, okay? And so if a lot of people wonder what I do during the day, other than just charts, I do training with people, like mentorship type sessions, depending upon, the length and the coverage depends upon if they're clients, because we educate our clients, or if they're prospective clients and think about coming on board. And so I got an interesting conversation with someone.
Big picture strategy. It's like, yeah. Overall.
Yeah. It's not a sales pitch. It's genuine learning. And I think if you talk to the person who I was meeting with just the other day, she would say the exact same thing. Like, there was a lot of knowledge being transferred. And I learn more when I talk to people than anything I ever give them. And so the sessions are kind of a joy for me as well. And so I'm talking with this person, and she's newer to trading. And she's got friends that have been trading for years, like their entire lives, maybe their adult lives. And that is a really dangerous combination. And so I don't think the person that I'm talking about will mind me kind of elaborating even further into what we were talking about. Because none of it's derogatory, but I'm telling you, the people that she's talked to sound really smart. And therein lies the problem. They can sound smart, but they can confuse the blank out of you when people talk about trading. And so when I talk trading with people, I always boil it down to the most simplistic conversation possible. And then whatever, I go from there. I build up. But when people who aren't used to talking to other people about trading, oftentimes they want to sound smart or successful. And they keep it at such a complicated level for whatever. It doesn't have to be nefarious. That it does is end up confusing you. This nice person who is newer to trading and to options trading was telling me she's looking at tick charts of Tesla to intraday trade these things when she really hasn't had the experience to understand the value of those charts per se. That's not a smarts thing. That's a nuanced experience thing. And so I don't think she's alone, though, meaning that this is a solitary trading. Like, if you're trading or investing, and that's your primary focus in life, and before someone tunes out and goes, well, I got a day job, Tim, like, there's a ton of people that listen to the show every week. We have all kinds. And the truth of the matter is that a number of our clients, because of the way that we educate, are involved in smaller portfolios that they manage on their own. And we manage most of their retirement, the money they can't ever afford to lose because they're having a bad week.
Right.
So, and kind of, we'd like our clients to be involved, meaning the more educated they are in understanding, the better clients they are because they understand how difficult this endeavor can be. It's not far flung. I don't understand why you guys aren't up 100%. It's nothing like that. And so this person I'm talking to was using really complicated strategies. And I think especially in weeks that we just had in the markets, it helps to simplify some things. So I'd like to go over some steps, Daniel, just to simplify your trading and give a setup. Yeah. You think we can do that?
Sure.
Okay. So I suggested to this person who Now, to this person, a daily chart of a stock, I felt, might have been an eternity to her. Okay? So she liked to trade intraday. So what I'm about to say works on any time frame, be it daily, weekly. It's just when you get your signaling, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, instead of trading on a tick chart and getting these micro moves and then, you know, as she described it, always having my finger on the sell button, why don't we find a way to relax? Because the longer you stare at the charts, the worse you get, by the way. Right. That's people don't understand that. And I said, why don't we try a 5 exponential moving average crossing through an 8 exponential moving average, meaning that would be your buy trigger. That means if you're looking at, say, the NASDAQ or the QQQ ETF, what you would do is you'd wait for the moment on a 15-minute chart, per se, and you would wait for the 5 exponential to cross above the 8. And that would be your sell your buy trigger.
Let me put my Tim Turner on. So the 5 period in an intraday chart, whatever that may be,
right?
If the 5 is overtaking the 8, that means the very short-term momentum is actually is stronger than the longer short-term momentum. I mean, they're both pretty short-term, but you're showing the real short-term momentum is increasing.
Yep. And then your sell
increase trigger, your probability,
your sell trigger, so you don't have to sit with your finger on the button, is if
when it reverses
yeah. when the 5 crosses back below the 8.
Right.
And before someone just starts laughing at the, no, like, gives me the no blank, Tim, I can't believe you just told me that, like, don't waste my time, I want you to go back on a chart of the Qs and just see how that works out, say, over the last 10 trading sessions. The 5 crossing above the 8 as your signal to buy, and the 5 crossing below the 8 as your signal to sell. And then report back to me. Okay? I'm not cherry picking a time frame. I would have told you this back in January, or told you this back in December. What this strategy does, what this one simple strategy does, is a number of things. It limits your focus. Like, there's that saying that sometimes Danny and I joke about, like, you don't go swimming and say, hey, did you have a good time? Yeah, I had a good time swimming, but, you know, it could have been better. I didn't get to touch all the water.
Right.
Like, nobody does that. And so if you, is a stock,
it's analysis by paralysis. Yeah. People look at too many technical indicators.
Yeah, and so as a stock investor or trader, you can't touch it all. I mean, you have to have some kind of focus. And so I find people that are newer to this, and by newer, it just means how comfortable you feel. I mean, newer is individualistic. God, Danny, I am killing the show this week with all this technical. I am sorry.
No,
you want me to tell some jokes?
No, keep going.
I feel awful. I've killed any momentum the show ever.
Finish it up.
This show never had a chance when I started out with jobs numbers, and now I'm talking about technical trading. Do you want me to sing something or go back?
No, please. No, I'm ready to sing. You sing or technical, talk technical.
Okay, well, I gave you a choice. Yes. Would you rather have a bird poop on your head or me continue?
You know what? Let's see. Let's pick a good song, Don. What song do we want Tim to sing?
Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart.
I got the intro. I totally guessed at that intro. I have a feeling that's the start, though.
Well, going back to that, though, I will say intraday trading, regardless of what you're using, is very difficult.
Oh, it is. But that's getting to my point, because I do know that we have a great – we don't address them so often. We're always talking in the terms of daily or weekly charts. We rarely talk about the intraday trader, and I know there's a number of them that listen to us.
And the only time we actually use intraday charts is once we've identified a position we want to take.
Oh, I sneak
and
in.
Go along, and then we try to improve our odds of a really good entry.
Sneaking in.
Yeah, but we're not day trading.
No, we're sneaking in. And so 834 cross. 834. 5-8 cross. And so that's your signal to get out. And all you're doing is simplifying your world. Because people that are newer to this, newer isn't a specific time frame. Newer is how comfortable you feel operating in your environment. And when you're operating in trading, you're operating in the unknown. You don't know what the next tick's going to be. You have a feeling, but you're not sure. And what the 8, I keep saying 8, what the 5-8 cross does for you, like when it reverses to the downside, it removes the ambiguity of when to sell. And so because we operate in the unknown and you don't know the next tick, you need concrete signaling. No matter if you take the signaling I'm suggesting for an intraday trader or some of the sell rules to Don and that Don and I espouse in the videos, you have rules. All selling takes place on the chart, not in the fundamentals that are in your head or that were reported a quarter ago. And so what this simple 5-8 strategy does, and I don't know why I want to say 34, but 5-8 strategy does, it gives you a definitive signal to the upside and a definitive signal to the downside. So you're doing what? You're maximizing your opportunity for gain while protecting your downside risk. This is the thing though. I always tell people a couple of things. You can just buy the ETF, the QQQ, and practice with it. It's a very low risk way to do this. But a lot of you like to trade options. So I want to give you some things on options here that most people won't tell you, especially those developing courses selling them for thousands of dollars. We won't name names. You want to buy, I find, in the money calls, okay? Or if you're going to short puts. And that equates to a Delta 50 or a Delta 70 call or put. And I'll let Danny explain Delta here in a minute. But what that does for you is it gets you the right value, the most bang for your buck, so to speak. The right balance of intrinsic and extrinsic value lies in the Delta 50 and Delta 70 calls or puts, depending upon what side of the market you're trading. What you don't want to do is buy the Delta 20s. When you get the move in the direction that you're expecting, what typically happens is they don't by percentage go up as much because these moves are typically short. Now they can be exacerbated and those Delta 20s are like, Jim, you told me not to buy the Delta 20s. But consistently over time, the best bang for your buck is a Delta 50 or a Delta 70. Okay. For you swing traders to investors that like the options as well. The Delta 20s, man, they are priced. They're like fake diamonds, man. Will my girl know it's cubic zirconia? I can't tell. I'm going to get her a ZZ, a cubic zircon. She ain't going to figure this out. They always know.
Till she goes to the jeweler to get it cleaned 5 years later.
I want you to think as the person who you bought the cubic zircon for, I want you to think of them as the market maker. And the market maker, what they do is they price, right? And what market makers do is they just know. And so when you go to the jewelry store and see that a diamond ring costs you $10,000 and a cubic zircon costs you $2.50 and you think that's an easy decision because I can take the rest of the money and turn it into more money in the stock market. And then, as Danny says, it doesn't sparkle or have the refractions like a real diamond does. You get it clean and, oh, by the way, this is a cubic zircon. Your wife is the market maker and she always knows. And the market maker who sold you that Delta 20 call or Delta 20 put always knows that it's probably going to expire worthless and they got another sucker again. They're priced for attraction. They're priced to be shiny and bright. But all the chrome on a car doesn't work if it doesn't have an engine. The Delta 50s and the Delta 70 calls, they have engines. So I encourage you to, there are times where Delta 20 calls work. Don't misunderstand me. For the scope of our discussion, just bear with me here. What does all of this do? Again, it helps you focus. If you took the next 25 trading opportunities that came about and only looked for this signaling, I would propose that if you are a inconsistent trader, that your consistency will go up. Well, why? Because you're limiting the number of trades you're taking. You're looking for your setup. It's kind of common sense there. If you're not trading five different strategies on one chart, you're going to get better. You know, like you're just going to get better.
Well, at least you have some kind of discipline, right?
Yeah. And so the next part that I'm going to teach you here or talk to you about, not teach you, but talk to you about, is sizing. And so if you're an options trader...
I already wrote that down.
Oh, did you? Yeah, it's sizing. So if you're like, just to give you a basis of our risk, sizing is risk control. Like a lot of you think a stop loss is risk control. The position size to which you take is risk control, okay? You'll hear two schools of thoughts, especially with options trading, that the premium you paid is what you're willing to risk. Well, you don't have to be like that. You know, if you bought a $2 call and for some reason... all of a sudden the 8 I mean, the five crosses back below the eight and you have to sell it for $1.50, $1.75. Okay, take your loss and move on. You don't have to let it go to zero. So when people say that options, most options expire worthless, I think it's because people aren't, they're not trading. They're
not managing the position.
No, and they're buying cubic zircon too. And so that's part of the issue. And so your sizing is how you control risk. So if you've got a portfolio of, using a small number here, $10,000, okay, for someone who's starting out potentially and not trading options, yeah, 1% is what you want to use there, not 100%. But that's what happens, right? How do you cut a trading account in half? Trade heavy. And everyone's been there. Me, everybody has been there. I'm not speaking from a mountaintop on high. I'm speaking from experience. And so, like, when we trade stocks and ETFs in the shop, we take 5% and 10% positions, depending upon what it is, if it's a stock or an ETF. And so what is that doing for us? It's limiting our risk. Some of you, you know, like, wow, you guys got a 30% gain in Boeing. Why is that stock not 100% of my account?
Or 30%, whatever.
Yeah, or whatever the number is. And the reason why is because it's risk control, man. It's risk control. That's how you live to fight another day.
Yeah, with hindsight, if I'd known it was going to do that, I would.
I would have put you in margin.
Yeah, right.
You'd be leveraged 1,000 times.
Left side of the chart's easy.
Yeah, and so there's a big upside to what I just covered, okay, with this 5-8 cross technique. One, you're not paralyzed by fundamental research. Pick something. Pick an index. Pick a stock. And then, so you're not worried about screen, like all the stuff that we talk about, screening top 5% fundamentally and technically, which is really the foundation of our research here at Revere. By the way, we measure that. It's not us talking. A lot of you go, I only buy, like how many times on TV do you hear, I only buy the best stocks? Well, quantify for me the best. Well, when we say we buy the top 5% fundamentally and technically, Don and I can both quantify what those are, what those metrics are, and what makes them the top 5% of the market. And by the way, if you really do the reverse engineering on that, what are we doing? We're eliminating 95% of all tradable stocks and ETFs. Why? Because too much choice is damage. You want to limit your choices because you only want to trade in the best. Well, this 5-8 thing that I'm talking about actually gets you out of that paralysis of screening. So now you're just picking your favorite one or two things to watch. And I suggest, highly suggest it's one or two things to watch. And you just follow the technicals, the 5 and the 8. And you get into a rhythm and you do your next 25 trades, not just buy and sell, but individual, you know, round trip. Next 25 round trips is just based on that setup. And then once you figure that you've mastered that setup, and by mastering it, it doesn't mean that they're all wins. It means that you're consistently buying and selling based on the rules, and you see how those trades turn out. Meaning, did it net me? Am I? Because what'll happen is this will get you in the right frame with the market. Meaning, you'll most, because 70-80% stocks follow the general market's trend. If that's true, then you'll most likely be buying when the market's in on a 15-minute time frame, uptrending basis. And then when the market's about to correct a little bit, you'll be out because the 5 and 8 have crossed again. So does that all make sense? Do you need to clean that up?
Well, no. The bottom line is pick one or two things that you're going to watch, technical indicators, especially if you're doing the shorter term you trade, shorter time frame, technicals, because a technical or two becomes more and more important.
Right.
As the longer, I mean, if you're going to become a long-term investor, which I'm not advocating,
right,
then economics and fundamentals and the economy can creep into it and become more important. But the shorter term, but keep it to one or two things, mm-hmm, and your position size. Absolutely.
And you know, notice I didn't mention MACD, stochastics. You don't need it.
Well, those are oscillators. They only work in a specific type of market.
I know that.
Yeah, right.
But the people selling courses don't know that.
Yes.
And well, they might know that, and it's confusion.
Do you know that there are that, so Goldman Sachs used to do a study?
Go ahead. Tell me.
True story. Goldman Sachs used to do, no, I'm sorry. it was Lehman, but maybe it's Lehman Brothers, but they used to do a study every year, and they followed, they tracked all of the, they track all the seminars, the guys that were going and doing the road shows on whether it's day trading or MACD or moving average, whatever the thing was, because all of those, most of those technical indicators have some weakness, and they'd figure out what the top five were trading each year. And they actually had some very, very good traders. They would actually hire gamers that are young, like 16, 17, and they'd bring them in and they'd train them. And then they'd scalp you and take the money away from you. They would limit how much they were allowed to take from everybody every week, because it's like Vegas. They got to keep you coming back, because if they just skimmed you right away, skimmed you live in the first week, then you wouldn't come back.
Right.
But they're actually people studying that. That's why price and volume is paramount, because all of the technical indicators fill out of price and volume. So if you can read price and volume, that helps a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, I have not purposely done this, but Don has not been able to chime in, and I'm quite sure Don has something to say. Don, you want to chime in? I'm coming to you, Don, with topics. I just didn't realize I'd go that long on this.
It kind of gets back to the title that I had in the video last night. Do you have a plan?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's from a broad perspective. That's what we've been focusing on this entire year on the podcast, is having a process, having a plan, and sticking to it.
Yeah. And so, by the way, Don mentioned the videos. Thank you, Don. RevereAsset.com. We do 5 videos a week, depending upon the week. I do 2. Don does 3, or vice versa. It doesn't really matter. They're of equal quality, which is good. And what they're doing is it's just the red meat of the markets. It's what we perceive to be happening, translated in a way that you can understand it. And they should be your nightly viewing. And they're not that long. And they're not that, and I don't think they're boring at all. And they're illustrative, meaning it's not us talking on a video. For those of you that have issued the videos, it's not Don and I facing you, talking to you. We're showing you the stars of the market, which are the charts, the things you should be looking at.
Right.
That's what makes financial television so bad, is that the people, they think they're the stars. And it's not the people that are the stars. In this industry, the information that's on the charts, that's the stars. That's why you don't see Don and I on the videos. We're not as important as the information we're trying to present. And I think therein lies the fallacy of financial television, why I don't think financial television works, because people want to be the stars. And in this industry, the star is the chart, what's on the chart and what it's telling you. And we try to decipher that for you every night. There's that. And then I think I'll segue to this. I want, Danny, to talk about Uber and Lyft. Don't let me forget, okay? Oh, you know what? So I wrote this down. So you're on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, I got all that social media.
Okay. So I'm on LinkedIn. Sorry, I'm scratching my eye. I could not stop scratching my eye there for a second. I'm on LinkedIn, and it tells me who was searching for me. Like who was, because I have LinkedIn Premium. And it'll tell you, like, who was looking at your profile on LinkedIn. And I'm starting to get concerned. I wanted to tell you this earlier. Here's how this goes. This is why I'm bringing this up, Stock Nerds. Not because it makes interesting banter, but sometimes I'll hold back conversational things that I would normally talk about in the office setting with Danny, so I can bring them to the studio and talk about it with Danny, because it's interesting. It's interesting conversation, but I just write it down on the piece of paper throughout the week. That's how the show gets made. And so anyway, Danny, I makes me concerned about who I'm talking about on there. Like, if you listen to last week's show, Stock Nerds, you know that secret fee Fidelity. Like, I don't think I'm getting a Christmas ham from Fidelity based on, you know, the discussion we had on the secret fee. They're sticking in the funds, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people I'm not getting Christmas hams from. Mm-hmm. And so it made me wonder. So, like, this week, I had to write it down. Oh, I didn't write. Oh, yeah. I did write it down. So the top 5 searches of my LinkedIn profile this week were from Wisdom Tree. And I don't ever remember talking about Wisdom Tree. And this is the problem.
Yeah, a lot of that, some of that though, is going to be because if you've got a profile that talks about anything about investments or asset management or whatever, they've got these algorithms that screen.
Maybe that's what.
And okay, they're reaching out for you because they want to market to you.
Okay, this makes me feel a hell of a lot better, because I was thinking that people, like, it gets back to people.
Yeah.
I've had that happen once or twice.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, people in the annuity industry hate us.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, Tim.
Yeah. And well, they hate you, Danny, not me. They love you. CME group, that kind of makes sense. Now, where I'm getting my second master's, the UTD, that's all right. This one was interesting. The Online Trading Academy, which I know the guy who runs the marketing down there. He's a really nice fellow out of Irvine, mm-hmm. who sells the franchises to people. That one confused me. And
I went through the whole class.
Oh, did you?
Years ago, yeah.
And Invesco. And I keep thinking, like, it makes me feel better that you told me that, because I was thinking, God, what did I say horrible about some of these people? That's the only reason why I think people search my profile, is because I said something that irked them.
Well, you probably get a few of both. A lot of it, most of it's marketing, though.
Oh, that makes me feel a hell of a lot. They can market all they want.
You might just be a little paranoid, Tim. You're a little paranoid.
Well, you know, I don't mince words on here. Like, I believe that the facet that makes us so attractive, like, we grew tremendously last year, Stock Nerds, because of you. Like, your loved ones, you sent us your loved ones, and they became clients of ours, and we love you for it, because we don't advertise. Everything's word of mouth. And I think one of the things that makes us so trustworthy is authenticity. Like, anybody, I heard something really smart from Brad Feld, okay? I went to a talk a couple weeks ago. Brad Feld is a venture capitalist, and he wrote one of the best books in this space called Venture Deals. So I went to go hear a talk with Brad Feld. And Brad Feld says, you know, like, someone asked a question at the end and said, hey, how do you tell, like, a potential winning entrepreneur from maybe an also-ran? He said it usually doesn't have to do with the idea at first, because he's an early fund. He's an early investor.
Right, right.
Like, he's not investing in Uber 10 years later, you know?
Right.
And so he said, I got to be able to separate what is fake and what is real. And he can do this because he said, and it's really difficult sometimes because an introvert, you know, like, I'll miss some introvert ideas because the extrovert gets all the attention, and an extrovert can fake passion. Okay. I mean, like, they look, his example was really smart, so I'll just use it. He had a little water bottle up, and you talk to an extrovert, they'll tell you, oh my gosh, this is the best water bottle ever. Like, it holds 16 ounces and it's fluid and look how it flows. Like, and they get you all hyped up, and it's a freaking water bottle. But because you can fake passion about anything. He said, but what you can't fake is obsessiveness. He said, I want to find the entrepreneurs, and it doesn't matter if they're introverts or extroverts. I want to find the people that are obsessive about what they're doing, that they can just tell me about it and tell me the details, not the flowery. Why can't I pronounce, say that for me?
Flowery.
Don, can you use that in a sentence, please?
This bouquet looks pretty flowery.
And that's why I love Don. Can you use it in a sentence? Not the flowery, but I don't know. Why is that such a struggle for me? There's some words that just kick my ass.
There's a lot of words that are a struggle for you, Tim.
Oh, that hurts my feelings.
You're verbally challenged.
I'm a lot more than just verbally. Flowery challenged, apparently.
At least Tim knows the difference between a terabyte and a trilobyte.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Don.
That's a blast from a couple weeks ago.
I got that in my head, and I could not get it out.
So Danny got a new computer, which, God, you would have thought an abacus rolled
in
the shop.
Hey, at least I knew that a trilobyte actually existed.
Tim
says there's no such thing as a trilobyte.
Well, no one in the commonplace talks about it. Danny goes, got myself one of those trilobyte SSD hard drives.
That's not what I said.
And I said, did Yosemite Sam get that from the mud flap? Danny got his mud flaps rotated the other day too, by the way, which was a big deal. Just don't rotate the tires, Tim. You rotate the mud flaps too.
Tim's going off now. Do you think I have an accent? I don't think I do.
You sound like Yosemite Sam. Tarnations.
Water.
Tar.
I'll have a sip of water.
Tarnations. God dang it, Dan.
You lost train of thought. Good deal, Don. You got anything you want to talk about?
No, that's not it. Gosh darn it, you jerk. Brad Feld. Now, Danny does that to me. He'll let me go off. He'll see how far I can take it off the rails before I can rope it back in. That is a game under the game that we are playing here. A lot of stock nerds have figured it out. Some just curse at us. Get to the point. You don't get the
red
game.
Red meat.
Yeah, you don't get the game that's being played. Danny's trying to screw with me to see how far I can take this thing off the rails before I bring it back, which I'm about to do to Bradfeld. And so, stock nerds, you want us. The reason why you come to us is because I believe it's not the passion. It's the obsessiveness. Like, if you've ever seen Don, and Don's shown his spreadsheets, I know, to people in when they do training with that. We do training for free. We don't charge for anything. And so I like the obsessiveness to which we just work into the markets, I think is why it is. Like, you can't fake it. Like, I'll bring Danny into the office and I'll show him the intercorrelated assets, which not everybody uses the intercorrelated assets the way we do. And it takes a long time to figure out that rhythm. Of what you can't be watching everything. So what are you going to watch that matters? And it takes a long time to develop that. And I think how we approach the markets and how we approach how we look out for fellow stock nerds and market lovers is why you come to us. That's why we don't advertise. You'll find us, and when you found us, you'll turn the people that you love onto us because you know you want them taken care of. And the obsessiveness is what I think is why people come to us. So anyway. You know, you want to tax trading.
I heard about
you
that.
You heard this?
Yeah, I heard about that.
And so this is a big deal, stock nerds, not because of us or maybe because of you, but it's what the tax is going to do. And I'll put it in very simplistic forms. So in London, in certain cities, okay, mm-hmm. London being one of them, they have a tax on cars entering the city during like 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's like 15 quid. It's like 20 pounds to enter the city. And what that was designed to do was reduce congestion, okay, and reduce pollution, okay. China has this as well, except with license plates, and you can only drive certain amount of days depending upon the number of the license plate. But what it's really done is reduced car sales. And a lot of municipalities.
It doesn't take a rocket science to figure that one out.
Well, no, hold on. It does. Wait a minute, Danny. The common sense that for some people, common sense is rocket science. Okay, and it's you know, like, are we at peak auto? Meaning auto sales are down and everything. And these policies, and I'm not saying I'm for or against it. Don't read into anything.
Oh, no, I know you're not. No, I'm saying I can't believe they wouldn't think that was talking, hurt sales.
I was talking to the stock nerds.
Yeah.
Don't read into whether I'm for or against this. I want to point something out to enlighten you about trading here in a second. So it's killed auto sales. It's really hurt them, these progressive policies.
Sure.
And it's no different than when I lived in California where there was a severe drought. And I lived in San Diego for 10 years, stock nerds. And they would say, don't water your lawn. Okay, I won't water my lawn. And then the municipalities or the cities, like especially San Marcos, which is just north of San Diego, we are in a tax deficient state because why? The water bills went down. And so what do they do? They raise your water bill because no one's using water. And so it's like a dog chasing its tail. And so now what I'm going to tell you is what I believe about this tax on trading. If they do this tax, meaning every trade you pay, whatever the percentage is, it doesn't matter. Over time, what it's going to do is reduce liquidity because less. It's going to encourage people not to trade. Listen, you might not like the computers you're trading against, and you are, but a lot of them, a number of those programs are providing the liquidity, okay, to the market, meaning volume. Mm-hmm. If you don't have volume, you get hosed on your entries and your exits. You need a trading partner. Like Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock said, it takes two to make a thing go right. It takes two to make it out of sight. Now, Kenny is our producer. Kenny, if you would please drop, it takes two to make a thing go right. I can do that.
Kenny, that one's optional.
Takes two to make things go right?
No, it takes two to make a thing go right by Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock, man. Come on.
You know you're trying to give him like 3-4 drops, and right before he's probably he's probably didn't have spring break anymore. That's right.
No, Kenny, our producer, does not have. I don't believe he has spring break anymore. But I think the liquidity would become an issue over time, and so you got to be really careful about what you ask for. Just like some people want to break up Amazon, and it's an interesting thought, right? To break up Amazon, And we let's just leave Google and Facebook out of this discussion for a second. Whereas if you want to break up Amazon because you think Amazon's too powerful, it's an interesting thought because Amazon's the reason why there's so much low price competition now. Mm-hmm. And so the counter trend thought to that would be, well, they could just raise prices at any moment. As long as there's a Walmart. It's like the dog and I believe it was either Chicken Hawk or Foghorn Leghorn, I forget. But they would clock in every day on the Warner and the Looney Tunes cartoons. They would clock in and they would beat the snot out of each other during the day. And then at the end of the day, they would clock out and go home and be friends. They'd go to the bar and drink. Walmart and Amazon are that. They clock in every day. They beat each other, but they beat each other up on price. But each other knows that the moment they start to try to raise prices, the other one's going to undercut them. And it's okay. It's okay that Amazon wants to, like, Tears for Fear. Everybody wants to rule the world. Man, I just got them coming out now, Danny. So progressive taxes do interesting things and have unintended consequence that isn't discussed. And I want to just raise the specter a little bit and go, yeah. And some stock nerds will write back to me and tell me how I'm misguided, which is perfect because I love the discussion around this stuff. I don't take it personally, and I don't believe in right or wrong. So so the market did not trade well this week, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really good time. I have sell rules. My sell rules are living around Don's sell rules, but we both have our own take on certain things. But I think this is a great time to just get a recap of like maybe three or four of the top sell rules Don employs during weeks like this, because I trimmed and that's covered in the weekend video. I've got the stock nerd video this weekend. I'll tell you exactly what I sold this week based on rules. But Don, what are your three or four top sell rules to protect the downside?
I'm always shooting for low single digit as the maximum loss I want to take, mid single digit. So, 5-6% as the loss that I want to take on any individual holding. So that's the main one that I really am trying to adhere to. And that's when I position size at the doing the initial buy and then occasionally pyramid later. That's still something that I'm keeping in mind. The other one is I don't want to own anything that's trending under the 50-day moving average at the worst case. If it's really a leader, I would expect it to hold the 21 EMA, or I'm going to be downsizing my position. So those three, 21 EMA, 50 EMA, and keeping losses to single digits are the three main ones. But overarchingly, I always preach that the way to stay out of financial ruin is to never hold anything that's trending under the 200-day moving average.
Okay.
That will save you a lot of heartache.
Alrighty. And can you, you want to keep it rolling and talk about what you're thinking about the coming week?
The coming week, the main things that I'm looking for are that the 40-day streak that we had of the S&P 500 and over trending above the 10-day simple moving average came to an end this week. And then we quickly had three down days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. During those down days, we broke the 21 EMA, which is now rolling over, and the 200-day moving average. And this has me extremely concerned, especially because three of the last 4 days have been distribution days in the market. And a distribution day is defined as a loss in the market bigger than 0.5% where the volume is greater than the prior day. And a cluster of these indicates the possibility that the market could go could enter into a more extreme sell-off than just the pullback that we're seeing right now. We haven't had, from a percentage standpoint, it's not that extreme off of the top of the indexes, but the breaking of the 21 and the 200 day this week is something that I'm really paying close attention to. Friday's lows, I think, are going to be critical next week. We really need to hold those.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Is it all you had, Don? Or
That's about it.
Yeah, so for next week, it's options expiration week, which you'll get some. This could have been Thursday, Friday's pit bull, though, before options expiration. If you're not familiar with that term, you can just Google it on up. But Marty Schwartz is the pit bull, and term he coined back in the 80s, and it might be apropos for this week. I mentioned Chipotle and I mentioned Alta. Those Alta reports next week, that'll be really interesting. Alta's a holding of ours. Chipotle, man, green on a bad red day is always good.
Bully, bully.
Yeah, and so Don and I in a number of portfolios both hold the Chipotle. I like that. I think Boeing gets back above 426. It runs. Not there yet, okay? And I think Netflix and Facebook are very interesting here. On a really tough day in the markets, they're not just absolutely giving up the ghost. And so I find that to be interesting as well. Maybe something to study for future use.
All right, folks. Well, listen, if you like what you heard, tell a friend, tell a neighbor. Just go to revereasset.com. Check out our work. Sign up for our free daily short market video newsletter. And it also, this podcast will be sent out to you automatically as soon as it's put out there. You can also call us old school at 855-REAL-WEALTH. We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.